brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
It's part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity.
All right, guys, you are back. WorldWrestlingInsanity.com's JG's Radio Free Insanity for today, which is January the 13th, Friday the 13th, 2006. As I said in part one, we're going to be joined just in a second here on the phone by Kamala. A professional wrestler from years and years and years, ever since I was a kid. I still remember a match I went to, 1986. It was the day after Christmas. I saw Kamala fight Hulk Hogan at Madison Square Garden. I'll never forget it, too, because I remember at the time, this is so stupid because it has nothing to do with Kamala, but, you know, just saying. Danny Davis was still going through the phase where he was switching over to the evil referee, and we were at Madison Square Garden. Worst seats in the house. I was with my dad all the way up in the top. And Hogan came out to fight Kamala, and all of a sudden a little speck comes out, and everyone starts booing at ringside, and you kind of glance, and you really look close. We had the opera glasses, so you know, you look really close into it. It was Danny Davis, and everyone booed Danny Davis, and boo, boo, because, you know, he was doing the bad guy gimmick. And what was funny, I remember about that match, was that Kamala ended up getting disqualified by Danny Davis, even though he was playing the heel ref. And I remember being in the arena as a kid starting to figure out, you know, the true nature of professional wrestling, and being surprised that they had Danny Davis actually disqualify him. But then again, it was at a house show. It was a post-Christmas house show. But I'll never forget that match. It was definitely something that always stuck out to me. Dangerous Danny Davis disqualifying Kamala at the time. But yeah, no, Kamala and Hogan, some of the great matches that I do remember as a kid, and just Kamala in general, some great memories that I think we all have about him and his career. So you know what? We've talked long enough about it. Enough of me. Let's bring him on the phone line. Let me cue him up. All right. Here we go. So join me in welcoming to the show the Ugandan giant, Kamala Jim Harris. Kamala, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on it.
No problem, man. It's great to have you on here. One of the cool things about your career is that it spans so long. I mean, you've been a staple of wrestling in the 80s with WWF. You were in WCW in the 90s. And even now, in 2005, you were just a Taboo Tuesday. When you look back at wrestling and all the years you've been in it, what do you think is one of the biggest changes that you've seen from wrestling in the old days to the wrestling that you see now?
Well, one of the biggest things is there's no kayfabe anymore. Uh-huh. And it still kind of bothers me, you know, people's talking to finishes. I mean, the guys, including me, this day and time, talking to finishes over, and they don't care who him or who him. It still kind of bothers me a little bit, but, you know, I still deal with it, though. But that's one of the biggest things, you know, the kayfabe, and we wouldn't even ride together, never seen in the same dressing room, because things just have changed over the years.
Yeah, well, one of the stories about you that I remember was when you were first playing your gimmick and you did the thing with the chicken in front of the fans where they threw the, I don't know if you want to tell the story, when they threw the chicken at you while you were in the van?
Oh, yeah, I did that. I did that in Shreveport, Louisiana. I did it a few times. Yeah, where we have the chicken and they have a live chicken in the van. We did a lot of driving back then. And the late Friday that was with me then, who's deceased now, he had this live chicken, and all the fans would always gather around the van when we pull up to these arenas, and he would open the door, and I wouldn't get out, and the only way he could get me out is he'd feed me a chicken, and he'd throw the live chicken in, and I would catch it, and it was a little, I guess you would say inhumane, because I would take the chicken, take both legs, and split him wide open, live chicken, and then stick my head in the blood and stuff, but I didn't really eat it, though, but... Yeah. Yeah, I did. It was kind of gross.
What were some of the reactions you got from that, man?
Oh, you heard a lot of ooh, and all that from all the fans that was outside watching me, because every time when I'm gonna be at these buildings, which are like once a week, and they would always be standing outside waiting, you know, for me to get out of the van just to see me going in, mm-hmm. And it'd be large crowds, and I used to do that.
That's so funny, man. Well, I mean, do you think, I mean, nowadays, we were talking before about kayfabe, I mean, that's going above and beyond the call of duty to kind of protect your character. Do you think some wrestlers today would be able to do the kind of things that, you were able to do to stay in that character?
I'm pretty sure it could, but if they would do it, I don't think it's too easy for them to not do it.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think they would do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it would be easy for me. I could go right back doing the same thing in character.
Yeah, you enjoyed doing that?
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was kind of hard, but I still enjoyed it because after my matches, whenever I would go out to eat, I would sit out and get food. I didn't want people to recognize me, even though a lot of time it was hard for them to recognize me without my makeup and all my gimmicks on, but still, I just wouldn't take the chance, not too often.
Yeah, no, I hear you. One of the cool things about your character is you went through a big change in the 90s, where 90s, 80s, 90s, I think, when you were managed by Reverend Slick.
Yeah.
And you went from being just kind of like the Ugandan evil giant to kind of like the happy-go-lucky, learning-to-bowl kind of giant. What did you think about that gimmick? How did you feel about playing that role?
I enjoyed the bowling thing, but I didn't like being a babyface, with my gimmick. But, it still was, I could tell then that the end was near.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think they accepted me as well. And I could understand that because I like being a heel. I love being a heel.
It's a different kind of reaction you have to get from the crowd when you're playing a heel, definitely.
Yeah, it is. And then it's just so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love being a heel.
Well, you had more of a kind of a hardcore style, kind of not really, you weren't one for arm drags and things like that. You would just go in there and pummel the guy with the splash from the top rope, and I remember you did the gimmick where you were pinning them upside down for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, and it's different. You get a different reaction from the audience. Do you think that, that in wrestling, especially at the time period in the 90s, when the wrestling with the kayfabe was starting to be lost in the business with the fans, do you think it was harder to play that gimmick and have people accept what it was?
Harder to play the gimmick?
Being like a Ugandan monster when people were starting to get smartened up to the industry and told
them. Yeah, it did make it hard because going to the ring, you hear a lot of the people. Jim Harris from, some of them would say San Antonio, Texas, Senatobia, Mississippi, or something like that, which is my home, is in Senatobia. And that made it kind of hard. I didn't like that, but wasn't nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're free to say what they want to say.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of the internet, too, I think. A lot of people who maybe never, I mean, to be honest, I never heard, you speak out of character until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So it's the kind of thing where, as a kid growing up in wrestling, I never knew or heard you outside of character, and now it kind of seems very easy for people to hear wrestlers out of character and hear about their personal lives.
Yeah, it was kind of hard. The first interview that I've done out of characters I can remember was with Dr. Mike Mino out of California, and it was kind of hard, but we did a 2-hour interview, so I kind of got into it, from that.
How'd it feel to finally get a chance to kind of speak as Jim Harris and not as Kamala?
Excuse me?
I said, how did it feel to finally get to speak to the fans as yourself and not as your character?
It feels okay, it's still that, the kayfabe still runs across my mind, but still, it's okay doing it. I feel okay doing it and pretty well comfortable with it because I can kind of explain a lot of things to the fans and tell them a lot of things that they didn't know and that other people just couldn't.
Yeah. Well, you were just recently at Taboo Tuesday last year, November. What was that like, coming back, being one of the choices to team up with Eugene?
Oh, it was good. I enjoyed it. A lot different, years ago. But it was all right. It was the first time I had ever heard of Taboo Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I don't watch wrestling at all.
All right.
Yeah.
Is that for, do you just not enjoy it, what the product is today, or is it just time, or?
I just don't, I guess after I got into wrestling, I just didn't ever watch it. I mean, I have watched it, but not very often. I just, it's just like a job. I don't, don't pay it any attention unless I'm there doing it.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where it's kind of hard to use it as entertainment when you're actually doing it for work.
Right.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Right.
Well, that's one of the cool things, I think, about how your gimmick has been able to kind of sustain through the years is that, you know, you seem to have a really good working relationship with WWE. What are your feelings about the company and about, you know, the McMahon family?
I know I've said a lot of bad things about at least Vince, and not the whole family, but about Vince, because he was the one that I looked held responsible for a lot of things financially, you know, my pay, and, you know, things like that. But overall, he is a good guy as far as he know how to treat you. I never heard him swear but once out of this, and I've been knowing him for over 20 years, and he know how to talk to you, but I still don't think I was treated fair as far as, being, paid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would always say that.
Do you think that's the promoter mentality? Do you think a lot of promoters like to, I mean, because every time I've talked to you, I got to be honest, you're a very positive guy. You always seem, upbeat, kind of happy. Do you think promoters tend to try to take advantage of people who seem a little bit more easygoing than others?
Yeah, I do. I do believe that. And I believe that's what happened to me because I always sit back and I knew what a lot of the guys would be on Vince every day. You know, I'm just saying they would be on them every day when I would just sit back. Every once in a while I would say something. If he just said, I think you're being paid fair, then I just sit back. You know, when a lot of people would argue or have their attorneys to argue or something like that. But, and when I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, looking back, do you think, would you do it differently if you could, or do you kind of, are you just happy with the way things worked out in that respect?
I believe I would do it different. At least I know I would do it differently. Not at all, because I would negotiate contracts, which they didn't have contracts for us back then, not money contracts, but, a better form of paying than it did, you know, when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would just, wouldn't do it.
Okay. Now, we've talked, I mean, through the years you've had, one of the main things that I remember about you is you've had a ton of managers. I mean, The Wizard and Freddie Blassie and Slick and everybody like that, Skandar Akbar. If you had to pick one, who would be your favorite manager?
If I had to pick one, you know, it's kind of hard, but I would say The Wiz.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had a choice of two, I would say The Wizard and Skandar Akbar.
That's cool. Yeah, and I just actually just spoke to Skandar Akbar a little while ago about coming on to the show. He when he managed you down in Texas, I mean, you guys had some crazy moments. Any crazy moments stand out in your mind from your time over there working with Skandar?
Kind of caught me off guard, though.
Gotcha, right?
But I know it was a lot of them. We had a lot of outstanding moments. Except right now, I just come kind of dumbfounded right now, and I know there was a lot of them.
What about anything from Texas at all? Any memories? I mean, you had a great run there with the Von Erichs and with many of the guys that you fought. Anything that you remember? Because that's, I think, my first exposure to you was watching you on, the Texas wrestling from the Sportatorium was all over the country on ESPN, so everybody got to watch it in the 80s. So that was a time that I definitely remember when thinking back on some of the Kamala moments. Is there anything that stands out from you from just Texas in general?
One thing, I like wrestling in Texas, and I love working with the Von Erichs. The first time I ever done a leapfrog over 400 pounds at the time was with Kerry Von Erich, and he called that spot in the ring. And I said, you mean you're going to leapfrog me? You know, we don't have a lot of time when we call in spots in the ring. So he said, leapfrog. And I said, you going to leapfrog me? He said, no, you're going to leapfrog me. And that was one thing that I'll always remember. And I did it, and after that, I did it with almost everybody I wrestled, even Hogan.
Nice. What was that like with Hogan? I remember you've always had good things to say about Hulk Hogan. What was that like working with him?
Oh, it was, a lot of people would say it was great working with Hogan just because he was so popular and he was the champion. But as a person, as him just being Hogan, he was so easy to work with, and he was, I feel more comfortable working with him than I did any champion that I, well, I just worked with a few champions anyway, but it was just so easy and so comfortable working with him. He was just one of the guys.
Yeah. Do you think he had a kind of a different understanding of the business? I mean, he had a wholly, totally different character than a lot of people that wrestling fans had seen before, with the whole Hulk up and the superhero type of thing. Do you think that played well? I mean, you were, downright a heel, a monster savage with the moon on your stomach and the face paint, and here's Hulk Hogan, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed kind of hero. Do you think your matches kind of played out a lot better than some of his other ones?
I think so. I guess everybody would think that, about themselves, though. But I think so. It was so different, and he was a wild man with paint all over his face, and which a while back, people wouldn't even do that. They was ashamed to do it. But then when I get in that ring, with Hogan, I could turn it on. I could do anything I wanted to do with him as long as I stayed in character. You know, my thing was just being wild, kicking, scratching, and stuff like that. Not a lot of high spots like flying, drop kicks and all that stuff.
Now, you wrestled Hogan. We talked about Hogan and the Von Erichs. Was there anybody in your career that you didn't get a chance to wrestle that you always wish you did?
No, I can't think of anybody.
Oh.
I sure can't, because I wrestled about all of them that I've, like Andre, and I even used to watch Andre, before I started wrestling.
Okay.
And I ended up wrestling a guy that I had watched on television, and so I wrestled all of them.
Well, I mean, it's funny you bring up Andre. I was going to ask you about him next. I'd heard a story about an incident you had one of the times that you wrestled him that kind of caused you to have to alter what you wore in your wrestling outfit. I don't know if you want to get into that a little bit.
What was the question again?
When you had the incident with Andre that kind of forced you to carry with you in the ring?
Oh, yeah. That was my very first time. I had been around Andre, but my first time wrestling him, I think it was in 82 or 83 in Oklahoma City. And I was in the ring. During that time, like I said, we did a lot of kayfabe, and we was in separate dressing rooms, and the referee was, telling us our spots back and forth. And he was a messenger, between me and Andre back and forth. So when we got to the ring, it must have been a mistake, but I was doing what I, had been told to do. And Andre, he called me a bad name, and, he's so big and strong, I had him covered, and he threw me up off him. He was so strong, he threw me so high until I stood up.
Damn.
And he called me a dumb SOB. So when he did that, when he was coming up, I had him by his hair, and I went to work on his head. I mean, this was for real then. I went to work on his head, he covered up, and I had his mouth bloody, and I drove him back in the corner. And I mean, I natural bone put it on him. So after that, the next day, we was wrestling again in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Yeah, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And we was, we could walk from one dressing room to the other one without people seeing. I had a 357, but I had it in my pants. I didn't have it out. It was concealed. And I went to Andre, and I stuck my finger right on his nose. And Dick Murdoch was there. And he tried to make it out of a big joke, but so Andre said, I said, Andre, don't ever, long as you live, do this to me again. I said, I will kill you. And I meant that. At that time, I meant, I'm glad it didn't happen. And he threw up both hands, and I didn't have a gun. I didn't have a gun where he could see it. And he didn't know I had one. And he said, I'm sorry, boss, I'm sorry. I don't think. So what I said after that, I wouldn't want to recall that. And after that, Andre and I got along good. We wrestled all over the world and no problem at all, because I carried a stack bear dunya for a while, but it was hurting me when I was taking bumps.
Yeah.
So I started carrying a little old knife. I don't know what good they would have done, but at least I had something.
Where did you carry? I can't even imagine. I remember because I heard you tell this story a while ago, and all I kept thinking was, wow, like if you were to wear a knife or even a gun under a wrestling outfit as you're jumping around, I mean, that's got to be pretty dangerous.
Yeah. I carried the knife for about 15 years.
Damn.
Even after Andre had passed, I was so used to carrying it, I carried it. But I don't carry it anymore. But I still have the on my trunks that I wear. I still have the pockets, and it have pockets sewed on there.
Yeah.
Where I carried it.
Did anything ever happen? I mean, did you ever hurt yourself or somebody else with that in there?
Did I ever hurt myself?
To carry a knife under wrestling trunks, then did you ever have an incident where you...
No, it didn't. The dunya, the little stack bear dunya was a little 22. Now, it hurted me every once in a while when I take a bump. I would try not to take a bump on that side because it would count on the side. But sometimes you just couldn't help it. And then sometimes, even when I'm getting up or moving around, it would hurt. And then I start thinking about, it might go off, might trigger the trigger on it, and it might go off. So I didn't carry it for about 3 months, the gun.
Wow. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of funny because, I mean, as we said before, you were talking about with promoters and you try to be easygoing, but it sounds like in this case, I mean, you really had it figured out and you decided early on that you weren't going to let, at least the boys push you around at all.
Yeah, I got along good with everybody after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you got to do that early. I mean, if a young wrestler came to you right now, someone just getting started out in the business, and asked you what they would have to do in order to get respect from fellow wrestlers, what advice would you give them?
I would never advise them to carry a knife or a gun.
Right.
Even though I did it, I wouldn't advise them to carry a knife or a gun. Just tell them it up front, what you expect, especially if somebody in there that's going to try to take advantage of you. Just tell them up front, what you were taking, what you want, or what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And if they don't want to do it, just leave it alone. But I would never tell anybody to carry a gun or a knife.
Well, that's definitely good.
Yeah.
What is your relationship with Abdullah the Butcher? I know the two of you guys have worked together in Japan, very similar gimmicks. What do you feel about working with him and working with him as an opponent or just dealing with him in the wrestling industry?
Be honest, out of all the guys in the world that I've worked with and all the wrestlers that I've been around, he's one that, I can get along with him on the card, but I don't like him. I don't like him at all.
No?
And the reason that I don't like him is because in Japan, he kept blacks from going to Japan for years. He wanted to be the only black. And I have heard him say when he had this other Kamala 2, that he tried to hurt me with that Kamala 2. We want to be the only two blacks in Japan. But I had heard before that how he kept blacks out of Japan. So when they fired him from Japan, they had me coming to Japan. Then they hired him back. And he came to Japan, and they wanted to cut my money, but in front of Abdullah. They wanted to cut my money, and that was so Abdullah could get so much of my money from, couldn't have been from booking me over there, because he didn't book me in Japan. He never booked me in Japan. Japan called me themselves, but they was willing to do that for Abdullah, and I don't like him for that.
Wow. I mean, it's funny because a lot of times you talk to the wrestlers, especially in the U.S., and they talk about, racism that kind of they deal with from promoters out here. But I mean, what you're talking about is a case almost of reverse racism from somebody who is your own race.
Right.
Did you ever talk to him about that?
I talked to him about that when I was in Japan. That was back in, I believe it was the last of the 80s. I mean, I've been to Japan once since then, but that was around that time when I talked to him about it. He swore, he said he didn't have nothing to do with it, but he was the one that came and got me, took me to Giant Baba, who was the owner of All Japan Pro Wrestling, and Abdullah did all the talking. It wasn't, if anybody was going to do any talking, it should have been me and Baba, not Abdullah.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, it definitely came off kind of like he said one thing, but his actions kind of showed you something else.
Yeah, because Abdullah was the one that told me, Baba said he can't afford to pay you what he's paying you, and he's going to have to cut you like $500. I said, Baba's going to pay me all my money this trip, and I won't make another one because I'm not going down on my price. So that was it.
That's funny, man. It's funny. I mean, in this industry, it's the kind of thing where people tell you one thing, and not only do you have to find out for yourself, but then you have to double check it three times to make sure that it's, you know, it's halfway true.
Right.
You get a lot of that. Well, now, I mean, you're getting to the point now where you're starting to transition out of the business, and I know that you're also into your music. If you want to tell the readers a little bit about that, about your musical interests.
Yeah, I do a little bit of music. It's something that, it's nothing that I've done all my life. I always liked music, and I got here at home and had me a radio with a record on, and I just started singing, just doing something, and I kind of liked it, so I just have me a small studio here in my house with all my music and everything, and it's a homemade job. Studio what it is, but it have all the equipment and that a big studio have, but not as big. But I can record, and when it come out of here, it's a CD. You know, I do all my backup, all my mixing and mastering and everything right here.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I mean, it sounds, just from talking to you, I mean, you talk about, you know, your music, and I know also you drive a truck, which I know you're into too. I mean, now looking back, as you're entering kind of the end of the career, the end of the wrestling career. How do you compare your life now and getting to do some of the things you love as opposed to what you were doing in wrestling? Are you happier now? How do you feel about how everything turned out?
Yeah, I wish it had turned out better financially, you know. I wish I had made what I was due.
Uh-huh.
And, I would be in better shape financially. I have my home, and my home is paid for. And I have, it's on 15 acres. So everything is paid for. But I don't have any money. But, you know, I'm still happy. I live good. And I eat good. So everything is all right. I still have, I'm looking forward to my writing, my music and stuff like that. I don't look forward to, wrestling, getting wealthy off of wrestling, a future with wrestling, if I may say, but I do look forward to a future with my music. Maybe not me singing, but my writing.
No, definitely. Well, it sounds good, man. I mean, you sound like you have your stuff together, and it sounds like, you know, you're happy and you're in a good place right now.
Yeah, I am. I'm very happy.
No, that's great. It sounds like an inspiration. What we're going to do is, if you guys are listening to the show right now, if you go to the page where you first access the audio, we should have a link up for Kamala's site. You could take a listen to some of the music that he has to offer. It's available on your website, right?
Yes. And I have a lot of new music, too, that I'm going to be putting on my website pretty soon. Right now, the website is down, because I went to it just a few minutes ago, but they promised me that it's going to be back up by this weekend, and it won't go down again.
All right, yeah, no, that happened. Trust me. I mean, it's funny. Things go down left and right with the web and everything like that. That's great, man. Yeah, we'll definitely be including links to a lot of your stuff. Also, you guys know he's Kamala's one of the wrestlers featured in World Wrestling Insanity, the book. And Jim, it's always great to talk to you, and thank you so much, man, for coming on.
Oh, yeah, the same here. Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
So there you have it, guys. Kamala, the Ugandan headhunter, Jim Harris, stepping out of character today, talking to us a little bit about his career and some of the things that he's been through. Always great to have him on. Remember, you can check out more of his thoughts in my book, World Wrestling Insanity, The Decline and Fall of a Family Empire. Jim Harris, a big part of that. Actually, one of the first wrestlers I contacted to help me out with the book. Gave a lot of good stuff, had a lot of great things to say. So do me a favor, check that out when it comes out. Remember, guys, this is not the end of our guests. We're going to have more and more guests. We have a lot of people lined up already. The next few weeks are going to be pretty big. But, I want to thank you all for listening. Be sure to check out everything we have coming up at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. 2006 is going to be a big year. We're all very excited about it. So, guys, till we next meet, this is James Gutman saying thank you for listening. Be well, and I appreciate the fact that you shared our insanity. Take care.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.